Mr. Wolf. Dispatch a subspace message to Admiral Hanson. We have engaged the Borg.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our lovely bunker this evening, everybody. It is November the 19th. Is it not the 19th?
It is the 19th of November, 2006.
Normally when I'm right, Derek looks up and gives me a little nod. Good for you, girl. And if I'm wrong, he corrects me. So I didn't get either one of those, and frankly, I was just lost at sea.
Well, it's because I'm still trying to adjust the headset mic to prevent the breathing problem we had during last week's program.
Derek was so excited about some of the news
yes.
we had last week, he just couldn't help. I just stopped breathing at all, you know, about 3 years ago. So
yeah, so... We hope to avoid the heavy breathing that you heard during last week's program.
Yeah, we're trying not to. No, seriously, we use, frankly, we use very inexpensive equipment.
Consumer grade.
I mean, it cost us a few dollars, but consumer grade still. It's not the very pricey and very nice equipment that we'd have if we were in a professional studio.
Yeah.
You know, I sent a note to one of our listeners who mentioned the breathing. God bless him.
That's right.
I love this guy. He's so sweet. I mean, I can't imagine our life without him. But I said that we use inexpensive equipment. And one of these days, maybe, God willing, we'd be in a studio. And he said, no, love that homey touch. I think he meant homey.
Well, yeah. I think we could manage homey even if we had professional equipment around us.
I think we could, too, as long as we had, you know, a wall of paranoia and, you know, some snacks.
And we can certainly accommodate those things.
Yeah. We always have to have the snacks. I'm rejoice, I say, because I have a table in front of me and I'm sitting in a chair.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks you probably didn't notice.
Well, actually, my voice was lower.
That's right.
Because I was lower. I was sitting on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bunker's a little cozier than it was before. We had to accommodate the smaller size by
the bunker's much cozier. The
reallocating.
Old bunker was about 800 square feet.
Yeah. And this one is about 100 square feet.
Yeah.
We had to redeploy. We had to redeploy one of the office chairs. See, we didn't cut and run from the office chair. We had to redeploy the office chair to someone else's house.
Exactly. So, we did indeed.
But anyway, this is working out very nicely, and this table
this
gives you
lovely
a
lovely little resin table.
Mm-hmm.
It's the resin. I'm so happy.
And we're going to toss out some stories here that we think will resonate with you.
Oh, before you toss your own cookies here in a second. And speaking of cookies. Nicole is going to be with us this week, and we hear she's bringing baklava.
Yes.
Which she makes from scratch.
We're really looking forward to this. She makes good baklava.
I know. Yeah. I said something about last time she made it. I said, honey, this is delicious. There must be a stick of butter. And she went, stick, try 3 pounds.
3 pounds of butter in the tray of baklava that she made for us.
Yeah, I know.
So
I'm still wearing it.
Me too. It's well worth it. Well worth it. Well, I really have to start off, and I want to go a couple of different directions here today. I want to talk about transhumanism, because your series on transhumanism is marvelous, and if people haven't
Thank
read it,
you.
They need to read it.
Thank you very much.
Also want to talk about a DVD that we watched tonight, a movie called Obsession, Radical Islam's War with the West, and we'll get to that before the end of the program.
Yeah, I'm going to review that DVD.
Okay,
Obsession.
Good.
Probably this week.
Yeah. And
now that I'm finished with NaNoWriMo, we'll talk about that later as well.
Yes. Sharon is past the victory line. I'm going to talk with the director of Obsession tomorrow morning. He's a South African gentleman, and I'm going to call him tomorrow evening his time, and that interview will come up later in the week. So we'll have that to talk about. And just some other political things that we want to get to here over the next hour or so, and we thank you for being with us. Well, let's jump in on the transhumanism thing, because that's really on my mind here. Sharon has been writing a series
called Hollywood and the Coming Apocalypse,
which deals with the issues that we talk about, that Tom Horn very often talks about at Raiders News Network. And by the way, if you've not checked out Tom's new podcast, you do need to do it, because now he's podcasting, and he is one of the most fascinating and intuitive, not intuitive, that's not the word I'm looking for, insightful thinkers out there, who is...
Oh, I think he's intuitive as well, but he doesn't just intuit the information.
He's pieces it together and connects these dots, and has really helped us to see a lot of what we see. But Sharon's most recent article is brilliant. Transhumanism, Trek, and Trotsky. To go from one of the founders and driving forces of the Russian Revolution to Star Trek, the Borg, the Dominion, and tying this all together into the transhumanist movement is just, boy, I love the way your brain wrinkles.
Oh, thank you, honey.
So it really is something. And she's linked to a website called transhumanism.org. And there was something in there that I want to toss out, because it's really funny.
It's an amazing site. Spend some time there.
Because if you think that people like Tom Horn, like Steve Quayle, like us, are overstating the case, like the Collins brothers, they talk about this quite a bit too, Philip and Paul, about the transhumanist movement. If you think we're overstating the case, really look at what is being put out there by the transhumanist movement, and you will have your eyes open. The scales will fall from your eyes. Now, the most recent article, these connections that you make are brilliant. Please, connect the dots. Trotsky, the Borg, transhumanism. How does it all fit together?
Well, Trotsky believed, he was a Marxist, and he believed that in order to really affect change, it had to be simultaneous worldwide. You couldn't just have it happen in Russia. You couldn't just have it happen in Europe. It had to happen everywhere almost simultaneously. Otherwise, the capitalism of the other countries would erode the advances that had taken place during the Bolshevik Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
He had an awful lot of people that disagreed with him, and consequently, he was killed.
Mm-hmm. Which often happens in movements like that when you're you know, advocating for radical change, radical political change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that often happens.
And that's the sort of thing that the Borg does when they assimilate a new civilization. It's usually a humanoid one, and they enhance that civilization with mechanical devices and with nanite devices. Mm-hmm. And they do it by very quickly sending out their nanoprobes. And the nanoprobes infect the humanoid species and essentially break down their resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It is useless to resist.
Right. And it is the ultimate in collectivism.
Mm-hmm.
A hive mind controlled by... And this is where I thought, you know, it was brilliant, because I didn't see this connection before. The Borg Queen, as a type of Satan, who is the controller of the hive mind.
It's really interesting. We are seeing in Hollywood productions Satan portrayed as a woman.
Yes.
Even in Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ, that was a very feminine depiction of Christ,
absolutely,
of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this goes along with many things, not the least of which is that the old goddess worship is rooted in Semiramis and Diana and Nefertiti actually was one of those as well. And I think that we're getting back into that with this, well, frankly, Mary worship.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a resurgence of Mary sightings. And even if you want to go to the other end of the spectrum, if you want to look at Princess Diana, who died, she's being revered on many websites. If you just do the search, you'll find Diana being worshipped as a goddess.
Mm-hmm. So,
of course, we could also talk about the Statue of Liberty, which is nothing more than Diana in the guise of Columba.
Mm-hmm. So there are some very interesting connections here and some very subtle messages being sent out there repeatedly through a variety of different programs being put out there by Hollywood, not just Star Trek, but, the Cylons in the Battlestar Galactica.
You
as
and
a sort of hive mind.
Have gotten so hooked, so addicted to the new Battlestar Galactica. And if you've not watched that show, shame on you.
Yeah.
Go and get that DVD or instantly go on and start watching it. But you really need to go back and watch it from the beginning. The most recent show that was on was a real eye-opener, because the Cylons worship one god, one male god, and the humans worship a pantheon of gods and goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
So when they make an exclamation by the gods,
yeah,
they're referring to many. So they're pluralists, and monotheism is what reigns in the, well, the transhumanized.
The transhumanized Cylons,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
They look human, but they're not human.
There was a line, they were not born, they were created.
Mm-hmm. And
but so, apparently they didn't come after the humanoids because they were evil. They were baited into the war.
Right. Which was the episode this past week. Mm-hmm. Interesting there. And there are some very interesting theological overtones that we could go into.
Oh, there are so many.
We won't at the moment. But one of the interesting things.
The notion of the transhumanism.
Right. As whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Apparently there is a hybrid Cylon human baby that is supposed to be. It is believed by several characters in the show that that baby will be the answer to the next generation mm-hmm. of humans.
Think of this in the light of Genesis 6, a hybrid between a human race and a non-human race, a created race and a born race.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were born. The angels were created.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's very, very interesting. You could do a term paper on this very easily.
I'm glad I don't have to.
No, but what you're creating for Watcher Magazine, which is where Sharon's got this collection of essays that she's written, is of that genre, where you're exploring these connections and these themes that are being put out by Hollywood, that are being spoon-fed to the masses, sort of indoctrinating us to buy into these concepts mm-hmm. and to accept the concept of transhumanism as a good thing. Another one was Kyle XY, the program on ABC Family that we talked about this summer. And again, if you think we're overstating the case, go to transhumanism.org and read the writings of the transhumanists themselves.
There's an H+ push
mm-hmm.
that we need to be more than human. And
right.
It was in the X-Files as well, the notion that Mulder became more than human. He became more human mm-hmm. than he'd ever been because the DNA that was alien DNA mm-hmm. had been activated.
And that the son of
Mulder and Scully
was then the answer to, you know, was the mm-hmm. sort of like the chosen one, the promised mm-hmm. child. So transhumanism, as described by the transhumanists themselves at their website, is a view that human nature is a work in progress, a half-baked beginning that we can learn to remold in desirable ways. Current humanity need not be the end point of evolution. Transhumanists hope that by responsible use of science, technology, and other rational means,
mm-hmm.
don't know
mm-hmm.
what those are, we shall eventually manage to become post-human
mm-hmm.
beings with vastly greater capacities than present human beings have. Post-human.
Mm-hmm.
Next paragraph. Some transhumanists take active steps to increase the probability that they personally will survive long enough to become post-human. For example, by choosing a healthy lifestyle or by making provisions for having themselves cryonically suspended in case of deanimation. He's not dead. He's just deanimate.
I know a lot of people like that.
Now, we can laugh at that and say, you know, these guys are a bunch of wild-eyed dreamers. But the fact is there are some very influential thinkers and some very influential institutions of higher learning that have signed on to this.
Mm-hmm.
And they really believe that through technology and other rational means, mm-hmm. they will somehow transcend the limitations of our biology.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? We're all going to be post-human someday. They just don't believe it.
It's called life after death. It's the eternal life.
Yes.
Either eternally with God or eternally not with God.
It is really interesting. It was very eye-opening, and I went to this site after glancing at Sharon's article, which I then had to go back and read in full more carefully. But the transhuman belief is that they themselves will somehow be able to make humanity, to allow humanity to take that next evolutionary leap to become as gods.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. And one of the things that I think you really need to pay attention to in the news is anytime you see a story about the black hole at the center of our universe, read the wording carefully. Try to see exactly what's being said there. There's a big belief among New Agers and among some scientists that the black hole at the center of the universe, which has been found, supposedly, I'm using quote marks because you can't actually photograph one. You have to, you know, take various readings and deduce that one is there. But I would say there's a good chance one is there. That it is going to start emitting these particles that will shower the entire galaxy, and you're either going to survive or you won't. This is very similar to a belief by the Dogon tribe. They believe that the showers will emanate from Sirius, and that you will either survive or you will not. And it's a means of separating wheat from chaff. And those who do survive will be changed.
It's like the plot line in the series Millennium, which was our favorite series, of a schism in the Millennium group, which was essentially a cult, between two groups. One that believed that there was an event, a cosmic event that was going to take place some 40 years down the line, which was very similar to this, a wave of radiation or a ripple in time or a string or membrane or whatever they called it, that would pass over the Earth and cause widespread death and destruction.
Yes.
Yeah. And that only those who were, you know, initiated or illuminated, part of their group, would survive to rebuild society afterwards.
Precisely.
Yeah. So it is very interesting that these messages are being floated out there, and there's this drumbeat. There was a conference of nanotechnologists here in Columbia a couple of weeks back, and we missed it. I didn't.
Rats.
I didn't catch it. It was open to the public, too, and free. But I would suspect that a lot of what you will see in the way of biomedical nanotechnology is going to be employed by or is being done at the behest of those who are transhumanists.
Well, there are practical reasons for doing this.
Sure.
Step outside of the, you know, the New Age or tinfoil hat arena. I'm sure if I were a military leader, that I would prefer to have a soldier in the field who didn't have to have as much sleep, who didn't have to eat as often, who could be stronger, who could heal quickly. And those are things that I really do believe are being looked at and implemented and have been for, I would say, the last 40 years.
Yeah, I would agree.
The eugenics movement that began the turn of the 20th century is still going on.
Yeah, and most people don't recognize it as... recognize it for what it is. I think that the people who are fervently supportive of the right of a woman to choose, so in their using their words, would be horrified to learn that it's the same motivation that led women in North Carolina up through the 70s, for example, to be sterilized without their knowledge. Because the whole purpose was to prevent undesirables from being born. Children who would not have a happy life, which incidentally, the Church of England, at least one bishop within the Church of England, has just endorsed.
Apparently in the UK, there is a strong debate going on between the medical society, among the medical society and the clergy. And they're on the same side, essentially. Physicians and clergy. That if a child is born with a physical defect or a mental defect, something is going to make that child have trouble fitting in to society. That child could be euthanized.
Right.
And it's very similar to what we had in the news a couple of years ago. Who was the academic who came out and said...
Peter Singer.
Peter Singer, thank you very much.
From Princeton University.
Exactly. Interested his name is so close to Margaret Sanger.
Yeah.
Peter Singer believed that anyone under the age of 2 was not yet sentient.
Yeah, would not yet classified as a person.
Human,
as a human.
A person.
Right. Yeah, and we had a bit of a debate this past week. I talked with a medical ethicist from the University of Missouri about the issues raised by the passage of Amendment 2, which was the stem cell initiative here in Missouri. And he said that the question really boils down to at what stage in human development is a human, because he believes that life begins at conception, and I give him points for that. But then he said, you know, at what stage then does a human should a human be protected with the basic human rights, you know, legal protection under the law. And, you know, to me, it's like, well, if it's human, then it should be protected under the law. You don't kill it. He didn't go that far. You know, he was just tossing out, you know, these are the questions that are raised. He didn't really go so far as to expound on where he stood on those issues. But that is really it. Peter Singer and others like him would not accord human status and thus legal protection as a human to children under the age of two. It's sort of like having a 2-year money back, you know, full guarantee on your kid.
That's a horrifying thought.
It is horrifying. And again,
because there is a postpartum depression that can set in with many, many mothers.
Yes.
That, you know, for a few weeks, you might really wonder if you were cut out to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very least, you might think, maybe I should just give this child up for adoption or give it to my, you know, my cousin or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that same mother, give her a little bit of time, almost always turns around and says, what was I thinking?
Yeah. But to those who say that we should have the right to choose, I mean, it's the same spirit of Moloch that drives the eugenics movement, that drives, I think, the abortion rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just how I feel. It's the same spirit behind it. Speaking of the same spirit, we've talked over the last couple of weeks about Arianism and how it's been twisted and used to, you know, by Nazi Germany in World War II, mm-hmm. and is now the driving spirit behind radical Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched a movie tonight called Obsession, Radical Islam's War on the West. It is, I think, going to be played on Fox News Channel tonight in an edited form. I don't know what they've edited out.
I can guess what they've edited out. Some of those scenes where you see our own soldiers' bodies defiled.
Probably. That's very disturbing.
I think that was
probably
disturbing to watch.
The movie was disturbing, and it was really easy to watch that film and get very riled up against Islam mm-hmm. in general. They talked a lot in the movie about propaganda, and of course, we're aware that propaganda goes both ways,
mm-hmm.
but boy, you know, we were never exposed here in the United States to the kind of hate-filled propaganda that we're seeing coming out of the Middle East.
No, nothing like it. I will be the first one to say, from the moment we are born here in the West, we are receiving some sort of propaganda.
Sure.
We're mm-hmm. being trained to go in a certain direction. It's by our parents, it's by the school, it's by television, it's by whatever, the toys we play with, the neighbors. There is nothing that I know of, nothing that compares with what we saw tonight going on over here. With the exception of, I have seen some fringe radical groups over here,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, the Aryan movement is one of them. I've
right.
seen videos from groups like that, the Christian Identity Movement,
mm-hmm.
which was
right.
not Christian in any shape, way, or form, had nothing to do with Jesus Christ
mm-hmm.
as in reality. They may have said it, but no. What we saw in the DVD Obsession is taking children from the time that they could even understand your words and repeat them back.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a 3.5-year-old refer to Jews as pigs,
mm-hmm.
and that she hates Jews because they're pigs and would like for them to die.
Yeah, and then we saw young children that looked like they were between the ages of 6 and 9, young girls,
mm-hmm.
saying that with smiling faces, how they wanted to go up to George Bush with a gun and kill him, how they wanted to kill the Jews, and that they were the product of pigs and apes.
Oh, really sweet. Like, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm 9 years old, and yes. Oh, very much. I would like to find Ariel Sharon, and I would like to stab him.
Yeah, and then some of the stuff that we saw that was aired on the satellite TV channels in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
Program that aired, and I remember when this was out a couple of years ago, aired during Ramadan on a popular Arab channel in the Middle East that showed Jews killing a Christian child and using his blood to bake matzah.
Mm-hmm.
What's really disturbing is when you see the words coming from acknowledged leaders within the Arab world, such as Hassan Nasrallah,
mm-hmm.
Flat out saying, you know, death to America, mm-hmm. death to Britain, death to Israel.
And when you hear it in a British accent.
Yes, coming from some of the radical clergy in the UK.
Yes.
That's really, really striking and strange. But where the director, Wayne Copping, I think, did a really interesting thing, and I'm glad he did, was he spent a good section of the movie, a good portion of the film, showing the parallels between modern radical Islam and Hitler's Germany.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about that last week.
Yes. Now, he did not go so far as to show the link connecting modern Islam, which, of course, is MI6 and the CIA, which mm-hmm. protected the units of radical Arabs who served the Waffen-SS.
He didn't go into any of that.
No.
The fact that the West supported Nazi
right, exactly.
expansion, yeah.
But he did draw the connections. I mean, Islamofascism is not just a buzzword invented by the Republicans to try to, you know, take the election in November. It does exist, and there are some very strong parallels to Hitler's Germany in the 1930s, 1940s. Again, I think we are remiss if we don't acknowledge the fact that we in the West, the U.S. and the U.K., played a large part in the growth of the Muslim Brotherhood and then its daughter organizations, mm-hmm. Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Fatah, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same spirit that mm-hmm. lifted Hitler to power in the 1930s is alive and is promulgating this insane hatred mm-hmm. of non-radical Muslims. And I say non-radical Muslims because moderate Muslims are just as much, are threatened every bit as much by this spirit as we in the West.
Laura Mansfield has a new book out where she talks about what America would be like if we had an Islamic leadership,
mm-hmm.
if we lived under Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
She talked with you about that during one of her Mansfield reports.
Derek
right. speaks with Laura pretty much every Tuesday afternoon. Occasionally that date has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But once a week you speak with her, and she went into that and she said that it would be the Jews would all die.
Mm-hmm.
The Christians would have very limited freedoms, but if we got in their way and we refused to live by their laws, then we would die. Because that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just go to prison, you pretty much die.
Yeah, you're given a choice. You either convert, you pay their you know, tax and mm-hmm. live a second class mm-hmm. life within the culture, or if you refuse to do that, then mm-hmm. you die.
Yeah, and the Muslims who refuse to live under Sharia law,
mm-hmm.
and most Muslims don't believe in that.
Right.
They would also be subject to death if they didn't toe the line.
Mm-hmm. And the more radical of the clergy that we listen to on this film that we watched tonight, in the fellow with the hook for the arm in the UK,
yes.
Abu Hamza, I'm not remembering his full name, but he was the most radical of the UK clergy, flat out said that any Christian was like a cow.
Mm-hmm.
Any Christian or Jew, non-believer, kafar is the word they use, mm-hmm. Was like a cow. If you saw him on the street, you could take him basically as property, take him to the market and sell him as a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And if he couldn't be taken, then you just kill him and it's
so
okay.
So is it any surprise that Christians are being kidnapped?
Mm.
That people that don't, you know, follow the rules according to Sharia law are kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call it. They don't see it as kidnapping,
no.
I don't think.
No, it's this is part of our duty.
Yeah.
Now, again, this is not what most Muslims believe, but as was pointed out during the course of this interview, when you consider that there are 1.2 billion Muslims in the world, if only 10% believe this radical strain of Islam, that's still 120 million out there mm-hmm. who believe that their path to heaven is by killing the kafar, mm-hmm. or die while you try.
That's a lot. So
that's
that'd
a
be
lot.
A million for every country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically. So that is what's going on. And now what's happening in response to that? Well, American Enterprise Institute scholar writes in the Los Angeles Times today that we must bomb Iran. Now, the American Enterprise Institute...
He makes no bones about that.
No. The author's name is Joshua Muravchik. He's a resident scholar at the AEI. The American Enterprise Institute is one of the neocon think tanks mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. that's been instrumental in formulating policy and actively lobbying lawmakers in Washington to go along with this plan to reshape the Middle East in this along this grand design. You know, we take Iraq, we take Afghanistan, therefore we've got Iraq or Iran flanked, and then either it complies or then we've got bases from which we can go in and attack. Mm-hmm. They've been advocating for this for almost 10 years.
Oh, a long time. And his conclusion is that Ahmadinejad will not stop, and we have to strike the first blow.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be very soon.
Yeah. The sad thing is that he's probably right about Ahmadinejad.
Probably, because the truth is we're not dealing with a secular leader. We're dealing with someone who believes in the Shiite end-time eschatology that al-Mahdi mm-hmm. is going to return very soon. And it is he's sort of like a Muslim dominionist. He believes
right.
that he's got to set up the world for Mahdi to return.
Yeah. You know what we've got here? It's almost, it's like thesis and antithesis.
Yes.
Because you've got the Christian dominionists over here that believe that we need to take out the radical Muslims because they're a threat to us. And the radical Muslims, you know, and if not just because of a threat, you know, some of them even go further than that, believe that we've got to set up the world for Jesus Christ. He can't return until we get things set up for him and convert the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, you know, like Ahmadinejad believing the same thing, except from the Islamic perspective.
Exactly. He believes he has to take out the Jews, and he also has to take, well, he calls them the Zionists. Mm-hmm. And I think Zionism is a political term. It is not
a religious
term.
Yes.
It is not a religious term. It's a political term. But I think when they use the term Zionists, they mean all Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. In most cases, he is dead set on making his mark. And I am convinced that he will go right ahead and he will preemptively bomb someone.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got those two sides that are facing off against one another, and cooler heads
mm-hmm.
are not likely to prevail.
No. Derek and I have talked many, many times about the theories behind 9/11. And if you want us to do a show on that again, we can. But we've done a few shows on that in the past. And ultimately, we believe that there is evidence
mm-hmm.
for doubt. Evidence that
sure.
that causes us to wonder what really happened.
Yeah.
There are lots of question marks hanging over those two, that site. Well, all three of those sites.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what we believe about that. We do not believe that it's a phantom threat.
No, absolutely not. There are radical Islamists out there who do seek to do us harm. On the other hand, we believe it would be naive not to recognize that there are those in the U.S. government who are using this threat as an incentive to get to drum up popular support mm-hmm. for what they want to do anyway, which is take over the Middle East
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. Oil, possibly. Perhaps there is something more to it, as we've talked about before.
Whole Baghdad thing?
The whole Baghdad thing, the Masonic veneration of Nimrod, mm-hmm. which is what it is, and the fact that his kingdom was based in Uruk, which is resurrected as the modern Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same name. Look in the Bible, Erechiraq. It's the same name.
Just like Iran.
Yeah, which Iran landed the Aryans. So what is really going on here? Are we just seeing a replay of a 6,000-year-old war that took place between various spirits contending for dominion?
Exactly.
Over the
earth? It feels like the whole kingdom of Nimrod is trying to come back. And we've talked with Paul and the Collins brothers.
Yeah, yeah,
Paul and Philip Collins. Thank you very much. About that sort of notion that there is a desire in certain secretive circles,
mm-hmm.
leadership in the world, that wants to bring back Osiris.
Yes.
Which essentially is Nimrod.
Right. And so,
and,
you know,
we're not talking about Osiris being physically the same guy, but the spirit behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Derek and I, if you're new to PID Radio, whenever Derek and I talk about the political struggles that are going on in the world. We're ultimately looking behind the humans
right.
to see the spiritual struggle that's taking place.
And believe me, we're not getting doctrinal about this because we don't pretend to have any answers here.
No, we make no bones about the fact that we are born-again Christians.
Right.
But we believe that these spirits existed before Christianity started.
Mm-hmm.
They existed long before the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
They may not have fallen yet.
Mm-hmm.
They may have. We don't know for sure when that original war started.
Yeah, and we're simply trying to draw some theories here and some conclusions about what's going on in this battle. We believe that there are numerous spirits that have fallen, and that there is biblical evidence to support this. Mm-hmm. We draw heavily on the work of Dr. Michael Heiser for this, his
The Divine Council.
Divine Council, right, and his research with the Divine Council study group on developing this theory that there were, in effect, a royal court that served the Most High God, Yahweh, Jehovah,
mm-hmm.
And that some of them rebelled. There are verses in the Bible that support this. And you see in the division of nations after the Tower of Babel, 70 nations that were set apart. And so it would indicate that there are at least 70 of these,
mm-hmm.
which is also borne out in the legends that grew up around Osiris later in Egypt, and the number of co-conspirators to Osiris' brother Set when he was killed. So the full scope of history makes a lot more sense, especially Old Testament history, in which God can come across as somewhat vengeful and capricious, unless you understand the backstory, which is the rebellion of these fallen angels, the word I'm looking for, Elohim,
Elohim.
Yeah,
Elohim,
and their attempts to destroy the people that God chose for himself to use to redeem all of mankind. These Elohim that fell were trying to, and are still trying to, wrest control of the earth away from God and God's chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we'll say that God's chosen people should not be confused with the modern nation state of Israel.
Right.
Yeah.
If you have not read the book of Revelation in the Bible, the last book of the Christian Bible, then you really should. And if you have trouble understanding it, there are many, many sources out there will explain it. There's even one called The Idiot's Guide to the Book of Revelation, which we own, and we read it. We're not too...
It was above me.
Oh, so sad. I looked at the pictures. No, actually, I've been reading Revelation over and over again since I was probably 12 years old. And there's a lot of stuff in there that I still don't get. But I do know that if you look in there, you will see that it talks about Satan being cast down to the earth. Mm-hmm. And he says he's all upset because he has very little time. His time is short. That's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have been cast out here yet, but he's going to be cast down very soon, if mm-hmm. he hasn't already been. And his time is short. So there, the spiritual activity has really ramped up.
Yeah, and when we talk about things like transhumanism, and Sharon will make a reference to Genesis 6, and as it was in the days of Noah, again, this relates to the attempts by the fallen Elohim, supernatural beings that were, say, above the angels, but not as mm-hmm. high as God, to destroy the bloodline of humanity, so therefore God could not produce the Savior in the form of Jesus Christ.
You know, it's so funny. If you watch, you know, and of course, because I've written these articles, you probably have figured out by reading them that I love to watch television and movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to watch them for the deeper things that are hidden within them. A lot of the film and television that we've had over the last 10 years, especially the last two or three,
mm-hmm.
is really playing up this fallen angel copulating with human woman and
right.
the Nephilim. There's even a TV series that has a Nephilim being born who mm-hmm. is a savior to
right.
the fallen angels.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they are taking the spiritual enemy side, you know, the enemies of God, the enemies of Christianity, the enemies of the Jewish nation. They are using modern television and film
mm-hmm.
to twist that story
yeah.
to their favor.
Right. Because sadly, most of us, including us, sadly, and I will confess this, spend more time watching television during the week than we read, than we do reading the Bible. It Now, I have read through the Bible, and I've read all but maybe one or two of the Minor Prophets books.
But think about all the people who read very little of it or have read none of it.
But the fact is that many of us who, and it's only been within the last few years of my life that I've read that much of the Bible to figure out what was going on. Up until that point, I have to say that a lot of my theology was sort of cribbed from what I saw on television and in the movies.
Assuming without that they were being honest.
Yes. And even when I knew it was a fictional story, because it's fiction, you're BS detector in your brain doesn't kick in and say
shuts right off.
And I'd say, yes, you're right. There are probably a lot of people out there who are getting their theology from what they see in the mainstream media, what they see in entertainment media.
That's why ultimately, even though we refer to television shows and we refer to films, ultimately we say to you, go to your Bible.
Yeah.
You know, work out a reading plan. If you want to start in the easy places, frankly, the Gospel of John's a really great place to start. Then go to 1 John, which is toward the back.
Right.
And read his letters, and he explains to you how you can know you're a Christian.
We would not encourage you to start with the book of Revelation or the prophecies of Daniel and Ezekiel. That is a place to start. If you want to start and really get terrified, that's a,
although
okay,
I have to say that it all depends on where your tastes are. I started there when I was younger because that was my interest. And the pastor realized that. And so he started me out with meat.
Yeah, but I think
I could chew on it for some reason when I was that age. And I think I had probably became a Christian. I was 3 or 4. And I had been raised in a family where I heard, you know, I'd gone to Sunday school and it was so I guess in a way I got milk fed along that way.
Yeah. But I just would suggest that for somebody who's new to the Christian faith or, you know, exploring it, for me, the anchor always has been the historic evidence for the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, because that's an anchor that you can hang on to. When other stuff doesn't make sense, okay, I go back to that anchor. Okay, I know that part is true, and because that is true, then I can buy into the rest of this stuff.
But you know what? You're a Thomas.
Yeah, I guess I am.
God bless you. You are a Thomas. And I think that we need Thomases. We really do. We need you who wants to have that rock solid evidence that you can go back to again and again. You want to intellectually understand. You want to historically understand. For whatever reason, I was in a different place. There are gifts of the Holy Spirit. One of those is a gift of faith. For whatever reason, that was one of my gifts when I was young. It's just this gift of faith that, oh, okay. And it wasn't this naivete. It was, I knew in my heart of hearts, down to my toes, and I still do.
For me, the key was James, brother of Jesus. And reading that in chapter 5 of the Gospel of John, it's recorded that Jesus' brothers did not believe in him. So when Jesus was alive, James and Jude and their other brothers did not believe in him. And yet we know from the historian Josephus that about 30 years after Jesus' death, James was martyred because he refused to recant his belief that Jesus was God. Now, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I love my little sister, but it would take an awful lot for me to believe that she is God. Something happened to James to make him change. And I think it's recorded by Paul in his letters, where he records that Jesus appeared first to the women and then to Peter and then to James.
Yes.
And then to the rest of, and James was not one of the 12 apostles. But James was somehow selected by Jesus as, you know, someone who would carry on. And he wound up as essentially the first bishop of Jerusalem until the year about 62. So that was big for me. It's like, wow.
You know, and I would bet that there are many, many people listening to us who have had that same experience. I want to believe. I think I believe. Can you just give me a little proof? I really need that. And God bless every one of you, because I think that's the majority.
Yeah. And it's there. It's there. And it really, it just takes a little evidence. And if you're looking for somebody that can kind of guide your thinking along those lines, I recommend Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ. He was an atheist who set out to disprove the Gospels and disprove the
truth claims.
And then for further evidence, really cataloged in a really useful way, Josh McDowell's books, which are Evidence That Demands a Verdict.
Right.
And there are a couple of volumes of that book. Really good stuff. Lee Strobel's a good place to start if you're looking for the arguments kind of put together in a very logical form. I've summarized those, by the way. I taught a Sunday school class on this. And if you're interested, I'll send you the PDF outlines so that you can, you know, get a real quick read on it. But I do suggest that you get the book, Lee Strobel, The Case for Christ. It's was a real help for me in opening my eyes and kind of flipping the switch. Like, yeah, I believe. Like, wow. Now it's like I wake up in the morning. I don't have to worry about my feet hitting the floor because I just know that gravity is going to pull me down to the floor. That's how it is with me, knowing that Jesus Christ was every bit as an historic a character as Abe Lincoln, George Washington, Julius Caesar. You know, I just know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because
there's more
evidence
for Christ than there is for Caesar.
Yep. And I think just the logic of it, when you actually sit down and think, and I know that there are people who argue this all day long, but when you really come down to it, the only logical explanation for the survival of Christianity, the cult of Christianity, in the capital city of the Judaic faith, which had been celebrated pretty much the same way for 1,500 years, the only logical explanation for Christianity to survive past the end of the first century in Jerusalem, despite ferocious oppression by the Jewish political leadership and the Roman Empire, is that too many people in and around Jerusalem knew that it was true because they'd seen it for themselves.
That's the only logical
explanation that makes sense.
Right.
And my dad, an engineer, who maybe this is where I get it from, you know, he wants to see, you know, the diagrams and everything connected in the flowchart.
Your sister's an engineer too.
Yeah. That's what it came down to for dad. And, you know, my dad bought all these books like, you know, these conspiracy theory books about how the Christians really, you know, they took him down off the cross before he died and smuggled him out of the country and all that. He read all of that stuff and finally said, you know what, this requires a lot more faith than just the story as it's been preserved in the New Testament. So anyway, that's why I believe.
Well, before we leave PID Radio for this Sunday evening, we need to get to a little news.
Oh, yeah. And there's one I want, because this sort of segues into it.
Oh.
Because we talked about all of this, you know, reason that we believe in the fact that it's there. And what Bible prophecy teaches us is that, sadly, from a human perspective, things aren't going to get better.
That's true.
Well, we've got the leader of probably the most influential church in America today, Rick Warren, who was over in Syria meeting with President Assad of Syria over the last week.
He was there last weekend.
Because he believes that he can establish, through his peace program, P-E-A-C-E, which is an acronym for something I won't repeat. I just can't remember it at the moment. It's like, you know, preach, equip, and something, something. But they want to develop a billion-man army of Christians to revolutionize the world and change the world for the better by feeding people and educating people and basically improving the physical well-being of people around the world by planting churches all over the place. Now,
I don't see that in the Great Commission.
I don't see that in the Great Commission. I don't see it in prophecy or scripture. I mean, it doesn't mean we shouldn't try to alleviate people's hunger and suffering and pain. We are called to do that. Jesus makes that very clear. As you've done for the least of these, so you've done for me.
But the best thing you can give to a person is the truth.
Is the truth. And if your purpose is to go out and feed and clothe, as opposed to, you know, preach the gospel to the ends of the earth. I mean, Jesus even said, the poor you will always have with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did he say that because he was a pessimist? No, he said that because he knew human nature. There are poor among us because there are the wealthy and the strong who will always take advantage of their fellow men. That's why the poor will always be with us. Rick Warren apparently believes that through his inspired leadership, we can defeat this and we can overcome. We're going to have a great reawakening.
You know what? Even if I agreed with his idea, I cannot agree with his going over there, meeting with Assad, and then going out and saying how tolerant Syria is.
Yep. Yeah, he is media savvy enough to know that whatever you say can and will be used against you
Well,
in the court
really
of public opinion.
There was a video of him saying that
Yes.
on YouTube
Yep.
and within minutes
Yeah, it got pulled.
Yeah. It was still there when I looked and posted the article to Watcher, and within a half an hour, it was gone. Mm-hmm.
So Rick Warren, the purpose-driven preacher, went over to Syria and now thinks that Syria is a peace-loving and tolerant nation, and that he is going to go around the world and raise up a billion Christians to save the world. Now, again, I suppose it's preaching to the ends of the world is a good mm-hmm. is a noble goal, mm-hmm. but that doesn't appear to be his goal. His goal appears to be lifting the living standards of people around the world.
Let me say this. I don't believe in mega churches.
No.
And let me tell you why. Jesus Christ was the best preacher ever on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think most Christians would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
He had thousands upon thousands of followers. At any given time, he might be preaching to 5,000 or 10,000 people.
Right.
When he went to the cross, how many of those thousands were there with him?
And when they
he was
tried,
feeding them,
yes.
how many were with him?
Right. And they followed him and tried to make him king because they thought he was going to feed them.
Right.
And when he said, no, 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 that's not what this is about, then they got angry at him.
If you're going to a church, a big mega church, for what you're going to get out of it, you're there for the wrong reasons. If you are there to worship God according to the way he says you have to worship him and follow him and live for him, then find that church mm-hmm. that preaches that you're supposed to do that.
Yep.
Don't go to a huge church with thousands and thousands of members because they have really cool gymnasiums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This smacks of dominionism. His plan yeah. smacks of dominionism.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that having gymnasiums is wrong. I'm not saying that feeding people is wrong. I'm just saying that I think all too often big churches and big church planting ideas get it wrong. They get the cart before the horse, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Right.
First of all, you have to preach the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
You don't bring people in, feed them, give them little committees to be on, and give them nice, cute songs to sing, and pray that somewhere along the line they're going to catch in the text of your sermon that Jesus Christ died for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a, as you say, often the last thing on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
The goal seems to be to get more people in the building rather than...
Yeah, I'm not proud of saying that because I that reflects on every believer, the activities of leaders that are like Ted Haggard.
Yep.
It reflects very poorly upon Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me very sad.
In the same way that moderate Muslims, I'm sure, are horrified mm-hmm. by the actions of others who are killing in you know name of Allah.
Yeah, I know mega church leaders would go, don't compare me to that.
Well,
well maybe it's not a fair comparison.
Well, the fact is that we have a tendency to be suspicious of any Christian preacher who's too popular. Because, frankly, you don't get popular by preaching the gospel message. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is near.
Yep. You don't. That is the truth. Well, just a few things from the news. We've got George Bush over, George Bush and Putin and President Hu from China. They look like the dream girls in this photo that I put on here. They've all got on pretty light blue outfits. They're matching.
Uh-huh.
They're breaking into song.
All kinds of interesting things. President Bush stopped in Moscow this week to try to sway Vlad over to our new plan.
He's still talking to him about it, according to the stories that are out.
Yep.
He's still trying to get him to back the United States in sanctioning Iran, trying mm-hmm. to clamp down on what's going on over there. And sadly, I don't think it's going to happen because Putin is making too much money selling things to Iran.
Yeah, don't think that's going to happen. Meanwhile, we're planning for one last big push in Iraq. We may increase our troop strength by 20,000 rather than drawing down. Our top general over there, Abizaid, says that 20,000 more troops not going to do it because we can't sustain the force needed for long enough to really crack down on the insurgency there.
Also, there is has been a UN resolution to sanction and investigate the Beit Hanun.
Oh, the Beit Hanun massacre yes. in the Palestinian territory.
Exactly. Yeah. Israel is being accused of willfully massacring 18 Palestinians. in the Beit Hanun area, mm-hmm. and it's gotten very, very little airplay on the stations that I watch, the cable news stations that I watch. The United States did not vote for it, but oddly enough, Jimmy Carter may head up the investigation team.
Interesting.
I don't know if that was some sort of a deal made in the back room. Okay, we'll vote no, so Israel won't get mad at us, but we'll send Carter over to look like we're kind of supporting it.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Very, very interesting. Something that flew beneath the radar, dueling. It's high-stakes nuclear poker is what it is. The U.S. has approved nuclear technology transfer to India.
Yes.
Which involved granting India a special exemption to U.S. law against selling nuclear technology to other nations. Meanwhile, President Hu of China has struck a deal to build some nuclear plants for Pakistan.
Exactly.
Pakistan and India are enemies.
I know. This is like, okay, you give stuff to that side and I'll give stuff to this side. Mm-hmm. And they'll both be armed in the same way and we can make some money and...
Yeah, and of course, Pakistan is a Muslim nation and the home to many of the madrasas, religious schools, mm-hmm. that trained the mm-hmm. fighters in Afghanistan, where insurgent activity is continuing to rise. We're also seeing other tensions escalating. Eastern Europe, Moscow sent missiles to Belarus in response to new F-16 fighters we've sent to Poland. Ossetia is voting to pit Russia against Georgia and the rest of the world. And in Somalia, on the Horn of Africa, you remember Mogadishu, Black mm-hmm, Hawk Down. Mm-hmm. Somalia is apparently receiving arms, training, and financing from Iran, Syria, Libya, Egypt, and Hezbollah. So we got lots of fun going on over there in the East.
Jesus Christ said in the last days there would be wars and rumors of wars. Mm-hmm.
And if President Bush doesn't have enough to worry about, he's been hexed by a voodoo practitioner in Malaysia.
Again?
Or Indonesia, yeah. Yeah, this took place this past week. A guy in Indonesia performed a voodoo ritual to hex President Bush and his Secret Service entourage. He slit the throat of a goat, a small steak, and stabbed a black crow in the chest, stirred their blood with spice and broccoli. Broccoli.
No, it's Bush Senior that didn't like broccoli. He's got the wrong Bush on.
Oh, you know, he probably does. It's probably not going to work. And the magician drank the potion, smeared some of it on his face, and according to this, it would send spirits to possess the Secret Service guards, who would then freak out, essentially, and leave the president unprotected. So we'll see if that happens.
So there's the plot of my next book.
That's right.
Gosh. So, you know, there's a rumor going around, speaking of the White House, that Karl Rove is about to leave.
Really? There's also a rumor floating out there that VP Cheney might resign, clearing the way for a new mm-hmm. successor to the throne.
We've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah.
That Cheney may, for whatever reason, I'm not feeling well. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'll just bow out, allowing someone to be put in who is not elected, mm-hmm. and then suddenly, for whatever reason, Bush is out of the game.
And if there wasn't enough to worry about, we'll leave you with this final thought. Aliens could attack at any time, according to a former Ministry of Defense official in the UK. A gentleman named Nick Pope, who was head of the MOD's UFO project from 1991 to 1994, said that the UK is ignoring credible threats, credible information about UFOs, and that while there's no evidence to this point of hostile intent, if we get this wrong, it could really be huge. So just remember, aliens could attack at any time.
Now we're laughing about this, but let me just bring you back to reality for a minute. We've talked with Stan Deo, mm-hmm. and he has talked about the advanced technology that
right.
he was privy to, and how it did involve what we call UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about many times how aliens are probably nothing more than fallen angels.
That's right.
Dark spirits who are pretending to be from another planet.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, they're from probably another dimension.
Right.
Stan has been saying for a while that there's going to be a big disclosure event.
Mm-hmm.
That the governments really have been complicit with aliens.
Yeah.
Fox Mulder is right.
Mm-hmm. And you may wonder, well, we really don't have time to go a lot further
into
that.
No, but when you see a government minister come out and say that, just come right out and say it.
Yeah. This is a big deal. I'm surprised this didn't make more news because this guy is not from, I mean, you know, the UK. All right, come on. These guys are, it's not like coming from, you know, Bosnia or someplace like that. I mean, this guy was a high-ranking government official in the UK. You would assume a credible source. Mm-hmm. Got virtually no press
over
here.
There were UFOs all day today on the History Channel.
It's all part of the indoctrination.
I know it is. Well, we've got to get out of here.
Yeah, anytime you'd like to drop us a note, it's radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can send us individually notes at Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com or Derek@peeringintodarkness.com or come by the forum.
Mm-hmm. Peeringintodarkness.com/forum. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Cutting-edge news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.